You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
It's time we stop locking up people for possession of marijuana.
Now you see what that meant. That meant a huge expansion in contraceptive services, and they took George Bush's armies of compassion and turned them into armies of contraception.
But now with the ministry in bankruptcy and the church building sold to the Catholic Church, the Reverend Robert Schuller and his wife announced over the weekend their family is leaving the ministry he founded four decades ago.
Jesus is like, well, that's not how God thinks. Because the one, the individual one, is so important. He would have done everything that he did if it had only been you.
I jokingly called this the Issues Etc. Revolution, the near complete sweeping out of the old guard that emphasized church growth practices down the line.
You've heard about late term abortion. You've heard about partial birth abortion. Have you heard about afterbirth abortion? It's being proposed by some people who probably should know better, and actually, for some sad reason, being taken seriously. Welcome back to Issues Etc., broadcasting live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Colleen Carroll Campbell will join us in a few minutes here to talk about afterbirth abortion and the ethical call for that. Bishop Keith Ackerman of Forward in Faith will be our guest a few minutes later to talk about the imminent resignation of the Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of worldwide Anglicanism, Rowan Williams, and who might be his successor. And then, in the last half hour of the program, on this Friday afternoon, we're going to play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week. Four soundbites that we'll play for you. All you need to do is listen and then vote by giving us a call. And you can vote for any reason. We'll have the four soundbites ready for you to go in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest, host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Tell us about this proposal that you have written about recently from the Journal of Medical Ethics.
Well, this is an international medical ethics journal based in London. It's reviewed by, among other things, the professors in the United States. And there were a pair of Australian bioethicists, one originally from Italy but now in Australia, who proposed that we consider the possibility of what they called afterbirth abortion. And by this, they meant the legalization or the allowing, from an ethical point of view, of infanticide. They said that really, when you look at it, a newborn doesn't have any more right to life than a fetus. So we should allow the destruction of that newborn for all the same reasons that we would allow an abortion. And that is not simply in the case where the mother's life is in danger, for instance. Or even when there's a disability in the child, but simply when having another child is something the mother doesn't want to do because it would cause her psychological distress. They say, why should she be able to terminate a pregnancy but not be able to kill a newborn when really neither one is aware of their own existence, and therefore death is not really a loss to a newborn any more than it's a loss to a fetus?
So the I assume here that the presupposition is that they're basically want to erase the ethical line that has been drawn legitimately or illegitimately between child in the womb, child outside the womb. They just don't think that line should exist any longer.
That's right. And their basic premise here, which they state very frankly in their article, is that merely being human does not entitle one to a right to life. And that's, I'm quoting almost verbatim. So they start with that, and of course we know that's familiar because we hear that from abortion rights supporters all the time. Just because it's a human being doesn't mean it's a person deserving protection. So they say, if that's our premise, and it is, and we allow abortion for that reason, then why is it that as soon as this fetus crosses through the birth canal and becomes a newborn, suddenly she is possessed of all of these rights, including the right to life? They say, at least in the beginning, and they you know, specify later. We're talking a few days and not more than a few weeks that, you know, they didn't delineate exactly. She should, her existence should still be subject to basically the whims of her parents. And if her mother decides, you know, I really didn't want this child, or she shows up disabled and I didn't know she was going to be disabled, or here I am with this newborn and I realize I just can't handle this, the mother should still be able to have the child killed, even though that sort of line in the sand has been crossed. And so, you know, in a sense, what they're doing really is saying that there's no logical argument for saying that you have no right to life when you're in the womb, you know, a minute before birth, and then as soon as you come out, you have full rights. They're just saying, you know, why don't we just use our logic here? And since we're saying you have to be aware of your own existence for it to represent a loss to you, and that's the criteria they use for someone who deserves a right to life. You know, using that criteria, a newborn really doesn't have a right to life either, and let's stop playing games and differentiating. I mean, it sounds like kind of a rhetorical game that was cooked up by a pro-life, you know, a pro-life debater, but these folks are serious. They seriously support abortion rights, and now they're seriously defending infanticide.
What about adoption?
They address that question specifically, and they said, adoption is not a good alternative, or at least may not be an adequate alternative, because they said it can cause psychological distress in a mother to part with her newborn infant. That's a direct quote, psychological distress. Now, apparently, killing her newborn infant will not cause her psychological distress, but the point was, and they made this very clear, they said, you know, whatever reason you use, basically, for killing a newborn is acceptable because this newborn has no rights. So even if the reason that the person, and they define person, you know, a person is someone who's aware of their own existence, and that's why they say newborns aren't persons. So if an actual person, that being a parent, sibling, society, would somehow be adversely impacted by the arrival of this new child, they have a right pretty much for any reason to get rid of this newborn, at least for the first few days, because the newborn has zero rights. And they actually use that term, zero rights. You're talking about someone, they said, who does not, in any serious philosophical sense, even exist. So basically, if the mother gets a hangnail and doesn't want, you know, to nurse that and the child at the same time, that's all right, because the mother has all the rights and the child has none, because the child is not yet aware enough of her own existence as a newborn to count in any philosophical sense.
So they're essentially arguing in this Journal of Medical Ethics for the decriminalization of infanticide, plain and simple.
That's right. Very clear. And they said, you know, we'll leave it to others to figure out, you know, what the window should be where you're allowed to kill newborns. They said, you know, we're not saying exactly what sort of legal changes should be made, but we're saying from an ethical point of view, it simply doesn't make sense to allow abortion on demand but prohibit infanticide. And there was, of course, a great uproar to this article because this is a respected journal, the Journal of Medical Ethics, and the author's response, they had an open letter in which they said, you know, we're sorry that this seems to have riled people up, but we were not saying we were going to change the law. We leave that up to politicians to decide if that's a good idea or not. We were simply saying that, ethically speaking, this is the argument for infanticide. But they didn't take back any of their arguments. So clearly they think this is a rational and ethical position. And the interesting thing has been to try to see abortion rights supporters struggling to say why exactly it is not consistent with their own thinking that the human fetus has no right.
Now, has anyone been able to, from the abortion rights side, has anyone been able to distance themselves from this?
I haven't seen any successful argument distancing from this. There was a pretty prominent article in Slate, an online magazine, where a pro-choicer said, you know, hey, folks, we got to kind of look at this. And, you know, he was saying that this is just proof that we can't be completely unyielding in our support for abortion on demand. We need to carve out a few limits, you know, maybe against late-term abortions, because otherwise look where we find ourselves on the same side as these folks. But he didn't have any arguments why those folks, being the people defending infanticide, were wrong. And really, when you look at it from a logical perspective, they're right. I mean, if the human person doesn't really inherit their personhood and their full rights till a certain period somewhere along the developmental spectrum, then moving that period back by a few days or a few weeks into the range of a newborn rather than a late-term unborn child, really not a large leap. I mean, it's appalling in a certain sense, but then again, if you really think about it, abortion is appalling.
Could this proposal, and as far as I know, first serious proposal in a respected and peer-reviewed journal of medical ethics of this kind actually have the opposite effect, and that is highlight the fatal logic of the pro-choice side?
Well, I certainly hope so. And we have heard these kinds of things before. The most prominent advocate of infanticide is Peter Singer, who's a chaired ethicist at Princeton University, who's very open about the fact that he thinks gorillas and chimpanzees should have more of a right to life and more rights than some human persons, including the demented and, yes, newborns, especially disabled ones. So he very much thinks this way, and he's been very open about this and received a lot of positive attention, although I still think he's the best weapon on the pro-life side because we can point to him and say, look, this is where your thinking leads. So in a certain sense, yes, this Article 2 accomplishes that by helping us, you know, highlight what is really the logical and chilling and deadly position that abortion rights supporters find themselves defending. That's one way to look at it. Of course, the other way to look at it is that a growing number of Americans may say, well, you know, you got a point, and I really don't want this disabled newborn or this newborn that I didn't realize was going to be such a burden. I don't know where we're headed, but, you know, I think this is a pretty frightening benchmark.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She authored the book The New Faithful, and she writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read Colleen Carroll Campbell's latest column, What If Newborns Had No Rights, under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Colleen, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back, Bishop Keith Ackerman of Forward in Faith will join us. We'll talk about the imminent resignation of the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams.
You can call it what you like. I call it life. I call it life. I pray for things nobody...
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Do you believe that there's not one error in the Bible? That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Hi, this is Jonathan calling from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. Very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issuesetc.org.